All right, we are continuing on our series on the Master of Dreams, and we've been following the life of Joseph. That's what we've been doing. Joseph is called the Master of Dreams by his brothers. It's a sarcastic kind of label that's put on him, but the irony is he actually is the Master of Dreams. His whole life is defined by dreams. At the beginning of his life, beginning of the story that we've been following on, he has two dreams. At the beginning, there's two dreams in the middle, and there's two dreams at the end. We're about to come to today looking at the two dreams at the end of his life. So we've been following the life of Joseph, and he's a man with a dream from God. He's got a call. That's what it means to have a dream from God. It means to have a call on your life, a call from God. He has a call to lead and to have influence. To have a dream from God is to have an identity given from God to us. And it's powerful. That's what we all have, right? We all have access to that. We can all know and find out what call God has on our life. Who has he called me to be? What has he called me to do? We all have a dream from God. So we've been following just Joseph. And just one of the things that's really stood out to me in the life of Joseph, and maybe it stood out to you as well, is Joseph is really a man with a soft heart. He's gone through lots of things. He's served over and over again. He served his dad. He was the one who went out to check up on his brothers, not because he just wanted to do that, but he was serving his dad. His dad said, go check on your brothers. And so he was serving his dad. He served his dad only to be resented by his brothers and sold into slavery. Oh, it's okay. That's pretty rough. And so, but he keeps on serving. He doesn't let that bad experience stop him from serving other people. He continues to serve. He serves his new slave master. I mean, he probably had to, otherwise he'd be beaten up or something, but he serves with excellence. He serves with the gift and the identity that God's given him. He serves powerfully. And, his slave master, Potiphar, is incredibly blessed by Joseph. Like, even materially, everything's going good for him. So he serves his owner, Potiphar, only to be falsely accused of sexual assault and then put into prison. Served his dad, served Potiphar, it hasn't gone well for him. But even in prison, he makes a choice, I'm going to be who I am. I'm going to continue to serve. And he serves the warden of the prison. You know, I made the point last week that the Hebrew word literally is butcher. He serves the butcher. So that might give you an idea of the kind of prison that he was in. He serves the butcher, the warden, and his fellow prisoners. And he serves these fellow prisoners with the second set of two dreams by interpreting the dreams. And he asks for one favor. Just remember me. I was hard done by my family. I was hard done by my owner here. I've suffered injustice after injustice. Please just help me to get out of here, because I've done nothing to deserve to be put in prison. And he's forgotten the third injustice. He served the warden and his fellow prisoners only to be forgotten 4 years. So, but it's amazing. You know, it's amazing how Joseph continues to serve. So, we've been following the life of Joseph, the Master of Dreams. And we've been doing that because, today we're looking at dreams and tragedy. I always forget these title slides, dreams and tragedy. So we'll be following the life of Joseph because you have a God-given dream and you have choices to make. First choice is, will I seek that? Will I find out what God has called me to do? Will I be the master of my own destiny? Or will I say, no, Jesus, you're the one who's died for me and given me new life. I'm going to find out what you want me to do. How do you want me to live for you? So you have a God-given dream. You have choices to make. First choice is, will you pursue to find out why has God brought you to Melbourne? A lot of you have traveled to Melbourne from different parts of the world, and that's great. Awesome. Love that you're here. You make Melbourne richer by being here. You make Melbourne more attractive by being here, you know, because you're good-looking people. And so thank you for being here. But why does God want you to be here? Why did he, you know, for all the plans that you have, what's God's plan in you being here? Is that something that might be worthwhile finding out? I think so. You have choices to make. First one is to find out what is the dream. The second one is when you inevitably find difficulty in pursuing that dream, remember the dream has to reflect the heart of the dream giver. The dream has to reflect God's priorities. God has priorities which include dealing with injustice and confronting evil. And so when we pursue a dream, it brings us to our first choice. Will you choose conflict or comfort? In the pursuit of who God has called you to be, will you choose living a life of just staying in a comfort zone, or will you choose to have a head-on collision with the injustices in the world around you? You know, God has called you to bear His image, to be like Him. There are things that are wrong with this world. There are things that are wrong with Melbourne. And you are here because in some way the dream that God has given you, whether you know it or not, will propel you to deal with the brokenness in the city of Melbourne. Maybe it's your neighbours who are, their marriages is falling apart and you have something to share with them. Maybe it's your colleagues at work and maybe you just see in them what I was talking about last week, that evil of apathy. They just don't care. They don't care about anything. They're so jaded and cynical. And maybe what God is wanting you to do is to confront that evil and to show them that there's a life of passion and purpose. You know, conflict isn't easy. We hate conflict. I hate conflict. I hate having to talk to different people about issues that might make them a little bit, you know, I hate having that idea of confrontation. It's uncomfortable for me. It's so much easier to stay in the comfort zone. But I've seen when I've decided to prioritize comfort over conflict, and I've seen how that creates even more problems over and over again. You have a choice to make. You have a God-given dream and you have choices to make. Will you choose conflict or comfort? Will you choose faithfulness or bitterness? This is what I love. This is what I was alluding to about who the story of Joseph and just his heart, his soft heart. He serves over and over again only to have injustice done to him over and over again, but he chooses to be faithful to who he is. God's called him to lead. God's called him to have influence, and he leads and has influence wherever he happens to be, no matter what it ultimately costs him. He leads and have influence in his family, in Potiphar's household, in the prison. He keeps doing it. And even though it's cost him, it's made his life harder. Maybe you felt like that at times. Maybe you felt like, you know what, God, I want to be faithful to who you've called me to be. But it's just so hard because as I've done that, it's made me unpopular at work. It's made Christmas gatherings with my family a little bit uncomfortable and awkward because I'm choosing to be faithful to you. Or you can make a choice. You know what? It's just too hard. I've tried to do the right thing, tried to be true to who you've called me to be, God, and it's cost me too much. And we can become bitter about that. Will you choose faithfulness or bitterness? Will you accept or reject? Accept or reject what? The process. The process that pursuing a God-given dream is all about. Will you accept it or reject it? Will you pay the price? There's a price involved. There's a cost. You know, and I see that in the life of Joseph, he chooses to step outside his comfort zone and confront the evil around him. I see that he chooses faithfulness over bitterness, that he chooses to accept the process. The reason why I ask this question is because these questions, and the reason why I'm challenging you guys to think about these choices, because I've seen, you know, examples, but it makes me wonder. It makes me wonder about how many people never start the process that God calls them to be. Maybe they become Christians, absolutely, it's great. But then they just stop there. They never grow into who God's called them. They remain almost as Christian babies their entire life because they never start the process of pursuing who God's called them to be, that God-given dream. They never even ask. Never even enters their mind as, hey, God, why did you bring me to Melbourne? I mean, I've got my own plans, but why did you bring me? What's your plan in all of this? God, why am I studying at this university? God, why am I working in this workplace? What's your vision for this workplace? I need the money. I've got a plan to, you know, buy a house in this part of Melbourne. I need this amount of money and this job provides money. But why did you open up this door? Do you think you got that job? Do you think you got yourself that job? Or does God have a plan in it? I mean, that's not to denigrate your professional abilities. I'm sure you're all very competent, yes. But But there's a bigger picture. If we believe that Jesus is our King, there's a bigger picture. I wonder how many people never started the process. And then I think about how many people who did start that never finished. Because they chose to reject the price and the process. Because they chose bitterness over faithfulness. But I love how Joseph, that's what I love about this story, just his heart. He just continues to serve, continues to be who he's called to be. What I love about Joseph, he takes a risk again. He takes a risk. Another opportunity presents itself to him to serve. And he chooses faithfulness again. And this time it's different. This time he doesn't suffer injustice. This time everything turns around. Here's the thing. There might be a trajectory of your life where you serve and you serve and it just seems to let you down over and over again. But you can never be too sure that that's the way it's always going to be. Maybe if Joseph had gone into this situation, yeah, I'm just going to serve and it's just going to end up bad for me again because that's all that's happened to me in my life up to date. You can never be too sure that what's happened in the past will continue to happen because God is able to at any moment just turn everything around. And that's what we come to today. Bit of a few verses here to get through, but this is basically, there's two dreams that Pharaoh has. This is Genesis chapter 41. I'm starting in verse 8. The first seven verses talks about the dreams that Pharaoh has. He dreams about fat cows that get eaten by skinny cows. He dreams about beautiful sheaves of grain that are kind of consumed by, I don't know how one head of grain eats another grain. I'm not sure how that happens, but he dreams that this kind of beautiful, rich, plump grain is eaten by, like kind of blighted and skinny grain. And he has no idea what it means and no one in Egypt knows what it means. And so we pick up the story where verse 8, chapter 41. In the morning, his mind, that's Pharaoh, was troubled. So he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told him his dreams, but no one could interpret them for him. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "Today I am reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was impaled." So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream, and no one can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." And this is Joseph. "I cannot do it," Joseph replied to Pharaoh, "but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." So jumping ahead, so what happens is Joseph interprets the dreams. Pharaoh shares the dreams again. Joseph interprets them. And then he says, this is what it means. Basically, there's going to be 7 years of plenty. Just there's going to be an overflow of just agricultural produce. But guess what? After the 7 years, there's going to be of plenty. There's going to be 7 years of famine. That's going to be so severe that even the memory of all that abundance is going to disappear. So what we need to do is to prepare for this. God's giving you a warning. We need to prepare for this. So what you should do, Pharaoh, is find someone who's going to be in charge of storing the excess in the years of plenty for the years of famine. And it's a great plan. And we pick it up in verse 37. The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, "Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command, and people shouted before him, "Make way." Thus he put him, that's Pharaoh, and God ultimately, thus he put him, Joseph, in charge of the whole land of Egypt. So you can never be too sure that what has happened up to date will continue. If things have been going tough, you can never be too sure. If you're faithful, if you choose to pay the price, if you choose to go through the process, you can never be too sure that what's happened before will continue, because it can change in an instant. Here's Joseph. He's gone from being put in a pit by his brothers to serving as a slave to being put into prison unjustly, and then from the prison he is promoted to the palace. Not just anyone in the palace. He's promoted to authority over the palace. There's only one person with more authority in all of the greatest empire. Egypt is the greatest empire at this stage in human history. And Joseph is second in command. What a turnaround. What a journey. And if you think about Joseph's story, he's hated by his brothers. He was scorned by Potiphar's wife after he refused her advances, and he was forgotten in the prison. But Joseph chose to serve one more time. I'll serve again. I'll go into the breach one more time. I'll confront evil one more time for you, God. He does it. He serves one more time. Sometimes, you know, I talk about how many people never finish the process, never see the fulfillment of the dream that God has for them. I wonder if it's because they stop just that one more time. They're faced with just one more opportunity is given to them. They just go, you know, it's too hard. I've done it over and over again and it hasn't worked out for me. So they stop short, just one stop short of where God has for them. I wonder how many times that's happened to people. You know, it's a risk to serve. It's always a risk to serve human beings. Have you ever served a human being and it backfired? Ever served a human being with friendship? Ever served a human being with time, with money? You invested who you are in them and it backfired? Maybe they betrayed you, maybe they forgot you, or who knows? Human beings are pretty good at hurting each other. It's a risk to serve humans on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's always the safest, most fulfilling thing to serve God. So Joseph risks serving human beings one more time because he knows he's serving God ultimately. I mean, think about how risky it is to serve Pharaoh. This is a guy that if you make mistakes, like the baker, you get impaled. Being impaled isn't pleasant. What a risk to serve the most powerful man in the empire, but he does it. He serves one more time because he knows it's actually the safest thing that humans can do is to serve God. So Joseph serves one more time and is promoted from the prison to the palace, from living in rags to fine robes and gold and a ring and a chariot and a wife. Wow. Just bang, here's your wife. He's promoted, but he's promoted for a reason. In God's economy, in God's plan, God's purpose, God's heart to deal with evil in the world, Joseph is promoted to confront tragedy. There's a famine coming. Famines kill people. A 7-year-long famine, that could wipe out the entire empire. Who here normally stores 7 years' worth of food? Well, there's a tragedy coming. There's evil coming. He is promoted to confront evil. A tragedy is coming. It will kill lots of people. Tragedy is evil, right? Natural disaster, that's a bit of a misnomer. I put it to you today that natural disaster is a misnomer because it was never meant to be that way. We're never meant to have famines, never meant to have tsunamis, never meant to have earthquakes. That was never the way it was meant to be. The world wasn't made that way. As the story is told in Genesis, it was made good. It was made perfect. You know what broke that perfection? You know what made that, you know what broke that goodness? It was humans. Human rebellion. Human sin. Humans rejecting relationship with God. broke everything, introduced famine into the world. Now, some people think, why doesn't God do something in the face of natural disaster? Well, first of all, it's our fault that there's natural disasters. Second of all, he is doing something. He's always been doing something. He's been giving dreams to men and women who love him. Dreams to men and women who will study hard, work hard. Ecological issues, environmental problems. You know who should be having the vision to deal with that stuff? Is you guys. It's us. That's why we want to impact the campus. There's Josephs on that campus over there. There's Josephs at Melbourne University. There's Josephs at RMIT University, out at Monash University, where we want to plant an extension service next year. There's Josephs who will come up with solutions from the heart of God to deal with tragedy that we don't even know is coming to Melbourne. Do you know, I said before that we can never be too sure that what's continued in the past will continue into the future. Like, in terms of, like, all the bad stuff that's happened, we can never be too sure that God won't turn around in an instant. You know what? You can never be too sure that your comfort will continue into the future. And a lot of us have come, you know, Melbourne, we're blessed to live in Melbourne, right? One of the most livable cities in the world. A lot of expats move here because you want a better life, right? You never be too sure that the better life that you moved to Melbourne for will continue. Who knows what tragedy might come? Who knows how our human evil might manifest in the city of Melbourne? Will we be ready? Will there be a cohort, a company, a battalion, a division, an army of young men and young women, men and women, who will pursue the dream that God has given them to be able to confront tragedy when it arises with wisdom and full of the Spirit of God? So in the face of natural disaster, people think, why doesn't God do something? Well, he's been doing something. He gives dreams and he molds his man or his woman with the evil that they overcome to stand tall and take risks in the day of tragedy. Maybe just to wrap up. Joseph's whole life has been characterized by confrontations with evil because he was faithful to his God who gave him a dream of leadership and influence. Absolutely, pursuing your God-given dream will propel you on a collision course of evil. Because that's the heart of God. The heart of God is to confront injustice. He's a God of justice. He's a God of healing when there's brokenness. So he's gonna use us to do that, to be his hands and feet, to be his images on earth. But pursuing the dream of God, along with putting you on a collision course of evil, will also save people's lives. Because that's also the heart of God. The heart of God is to confront evil. The heart of God is to deal with injustice. The heart of God is to save people. Like their physical lives, their spiritual lives, the totality of who they are. That's the heart of God, is to save people. Joseph, he chose to risk injustice one more time. And this time it was different. It wasn't the same outcome. He wasn't forgotten. He wasn't hated. He wasn't scorned. He was promoted. But promoted for what? Promoted to confront evil in the form of tragedy. You know, this tragedy coming to the city of Melbourne? Who knows? Who knows what it might look like? But at some point it will happen. You know, tragedies already come, whether it's homelessness, drug issues, domestic violence issues. That's human tragedy, right? Who's going to deal with that? We're going to leave it up to people with a secular worldview to try to heal broken families? People who don't even believe in God try to bring healing to broken families? Is that what the church has become? We'll outsource healing to the government. You know, God's in control of who's the government, right? But he also gives his church a mission. He says, I want you to be my agents of healing. And I was, just a quick story, because Kira likes it when I share stories. I was just walking in the city one day with my daughter. We were going to meet a friend. And there was a guy who was going up an escalator at Melbourne Central Station. He had a bag of luggage with him. You could tell he was homeless. And as he was going up, the bag kind of fell. He wasn't on the escalator properly. The bag fell, then he fell over, cut his knee, cut his legs on the edge of the escalator and his elbows and things. And, you know, I helped him move his bag. And, you know, a couple of people kind of helped him up and helped him. And but I was the one who stayed. I stayed with him and I just started talking to him. And, you know, he said something. When he fell down, he said something. He said, "I'm useless. I'm useless." Just speaking this, that was his identity. He said, I'm useless. Nobody cares. It was something, words to that effect. That was a tragic moment. He is a man just speaking out hopelessness over his life in one of the busiest parts in the CBD, Melbourne Central Station. And I said, no, I knew in that moment, I knew God had set it up for me, right? I don't need to pray, "Oh, God, are you giving me an opportunity here?" Maybe the devil wants me to tell him he's not useless. Maybe I shouldn't say it because maybe it's a trick of the enemy. No, it was obvious. So obvious. God had set it up. This guy, I said, "You know, you're not useless. You're not useless. God loves you. I love you. How can I help you? Need some money for accommodation. How can I help? Can I pray with you?" Just a small example. You know, I can't deal with the whole, I'm not called to deal with the policy issues of homelessness and brokenheartedness in the city of Melbourne. Right. But maybe there is on the campus right now. Maybe it's you. Maybe you're meant to work in government to deal with this stuff. To come up with wise, from the heart of God, answers to the tragedy in Melbourne. Just because I'm not called to deal with it at the big picture level doesn't mean that I can't be ready in the moment, dealing at the level of the individual, a man made in the image of God who thinks he's useless. Will you pursue the dream? Will you pursue the giver of the dream? Will you be like Joseph, and when the opportunity comes to serve, will you serve again, even though it might have hurt you in the past? Every nation, Melbourne will be. I mean, that's why we do what we do. That's why we have the vision that we have. That's why we do Church 246. That's why we have Family Feed. We want to be family. We want to welcome people into this place. We want to honor God, make disciples. Now, we'll come around communion and Jay will go into this more, but Jesus saw the tragedy. Jesus served. Jesus served. You know, God, he sent prophets. He sent his law. He sent just prophet after prophet. And finally, he sent his son. He served again. And even then, took the risk to serve again. And even then was rejected, but still he served. Jesus continues to serve now as he rules. Jesus continues to serve now through his Spirit, through his people. I want you to remember that when we take communion today. I want you to celebrate that.